So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, the 22nd chapter, text 18. The title of the chapter is Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras. Sanat Kumaru Vacha, Sadhu Prishtang Maharaja, Sarva Bhuta Hiti Mana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi Sadhunam Matir Idrishi Sanat Kumaru Vacha Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Sarva Bhuta Hitatmana Bhavata Vidusha Chapi Sadhunam Matir Idrishi Sanat Kumaru Vacha Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Sarva Bhuta Hitatmana Bhavata Vidusha Chapi Sadhunam Matir Idrishi Vaishnavas Sanat Kumara Uvacha. Sanat Kumar said, Sadhu, saintly, Prishtam, question. Maharaja, my dear king, Sarvabhuta, all living entities, Hita Atmana, by one who desires good for all, Bhavata, by you, Vidusha, well learned, Cha, and Api, although, Sadhunam, of the saintly persons, Mati, intelligence, Idrishi, like this. Translation. Sanat Kumar said, my dear King Prithu, I am very nicely questioned by you. Such questions are beneficial for all living entities, especially because they are raised by you, who are always thinking of the good of others. Although you know everything, you ask such questions because that is the behavior of saintly persons. Such intelligence is befitting your position. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Prithu was well conversant in transcendental science, yet he presented himself before the Kumaras as one ignorant of it. The idea is that even if a person is very exalted and knows everything, before his superior, he should present questions. For instance, although Arjuna knew all the transcendental science, he questioned Krishna as if he did not know. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj knew everything, but he presented himself before the Kumaras as if he did not know anything. The idea is that questions by exalted persons put before the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotees are meant for the benefit of the general people. Therefore, sometimes great personalities put themselves in that position and inquire from a higher authority, because they are always thinking of the benefit of others. Om Maginata Midandasya Ganangana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilatam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karati Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yatkripatva Maham Bande Shri Guru Dina Taranam Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So nice to be back. Hare Krishna, everybody. this whole pastime of Maharaj Prithu points out in many different ways and of course it's pointed out many other places in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita as well, the value of association with devotees. Association with devotees is considered to be a crown jewel in the life of a Vaishnava, that there's really not anything that's really more valuable to a devotee than the association of other devotees. Here, we, you know, in this continuation of this story from the very beginning, we saw first the Brahmins who noticed Venu was not behaving properly, and then they made some decisions about him. And then Prithu and his activities, being very compassionate to help the citizens, to protect the citizens, and then him speaking to the citizens and teaching them about the value of Vaishnava association and behavior, and then now the appearance of four great Vaishnavas in the assembly. Prabhupada points out that because the citizens had been trained properly by Prithu Maharaj, because they had heard from him, when the four Kumaras arrived, they were immediately very enthusiastic to greet them properly and take care of them properly, because they had already heard that of the importance of a Vaishnava. Vaishnavas give us certain things. One of the main things that they give us is they give us faith. It's described in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada speaks very strongly in the 3rd verse purport that faith is created by the association of devotees. And not only is it created by the association of devotees, but it's the most important possession of a devotee. Without faith, one can't move forward in Krishna consciousness. Faith is the beginning, Shraddha. It starts us on the path towards prema. And as it solidifies, as it becomes stronger, it becomes nishtar, fixed. And that process of cooking down Shraddha and making it firm into nishtha is enhanced and is supported by the association of Vaishnavas. Without good association, one becomes weak, one becomes confused, and by good association, one becomes enlightened and enlivened to move forward in one Krishna consciousness. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we hear that the great souls, they enlighten and enliven one another by exchanging about Krishna, by talking about him, by hearing and by chanting. So this association with devotees is a very, very important commodity, and it keeps us alive. It's like an infusion of spirituality, which we need on a regular basis. If we're alone or we're in the association of non-devotees, we find very quickly that we feel impelled, that we have to change, we have to go and get some association, even though sometimes when we're in association, we feel like, wow, I'd like to be by myself, I want to go off, and I just want to have my space, and, you know, I can't handle this anymore. But if we're without the association of devotees, then very quickly we understand, I just go visit your mother sometime, and you'll understand, you know, 2 days, it's enough. And then you feel like, oh no, I need the association of devotees. Where are the devotees? Because the devotees help us to remember that we need to hear about Krishna all the time. Just by seeing a devotee, Lord Chaitanya described that, just by seeing a devotee, somebody who has tilak on their head, somebody who's wearing kunti mala, immediately one becomes aware that they're spiritual by nature, that they need to engage in devotional service, that they should exchange with devotees. Sometimes we take the association of devotees quite for granted, and we think that just by being in physical proximity of devotees is sufficient, right? Even if we're playing soccer with them or watching a movie with them or even doing things that aren't really very conducive to devotional service, if the person who's sitting next to us in the restaurant has a spiritual name, then we're associating with devotees. But the experience really has to go deeper than that to be most effective. And we see here, as we do in many, many places in the Bhagavatam, that the essence of the association of devotees is in questions and answers. Srila Prabhupada says that you can actually tell the association that one keeps by the questions they ask. He has a very nice purport in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he talks about how the birds, every day the birds are asking questions. Where is my worm? Where is my worm? Right? They get up, chirp, chirp, where is my worm? Where is my worm? And the dog is going, "Arf, arf, who are you? What are you doing here? Where did you come from? What are you doing in my place?" Right? And the spider is thinking, when will a little fly land in my web? So everybody is sitting around asking their questions. Where will I eat? How will I mate? How will I defend? Who will give me material satisfaction? These are the questions of the materialistic persons. Prabhupada talks about the merchants who are in the stock market or the mercantile business, and they're asking, what will you give me and how much will you charge? I was just in India. You can hear that all over the place. What will you give me and how much will you charge? And, you know, what is the best price? Give me the best price. So these are the questions of the materialistic persons. They're constantly wondering about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, trying to get the best deal on sense gratification. And so they associate with persons who will inspire and enliven them in that business. There's a story Prabhupada tells of a priest who was trying to preach to the miners, you know, miners, people who mine coal. And so he was preaching to them, and he was trying to tell them about hell, because one of the practices of Christian preaching is to inspire people to not want to go to a hellish situation. Also, we have in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, let's put a little bit of the fear of the Lord in you. So he was trying to tell these miners about hell in such a way that they wouldn't want to go there, they'd want to go to heaven. So he was telling them how hell was so dark and how hell was so cold and so damp, and they were thinking, what's the big deal? It's just like our mind. It's dark down here, we never see light, and it's sometimes very hot, sometimes very cold, and damp, yes, and never see light, yes, so what's the difference? So the priest was thinking, how can I get them to understand? So he said, there's no newspapers. So then they went, no newspapers, horrible, Prabhupada said. So, yes, because we want to know, we're always asking questions, what's going on in the world? How's the economy in America? And, you know, where the terrorists strike next? And what's the latest on the cricket match? Even when I was in Govardhan for a week, and every day I had to walk along the Parikrama Marg, some ways to get to where I was staying. And I would walk by and there would be so many people sitting there, with bowls in front of them, you know, hoping for some donation. So some of them were reading Shastra, some of them were chanting verses or chanting Japa. But every day I would go by this one man, and he had dreads and he was wearing the dress of a sannyasi. And every time I saw him, which was quite some times I saw him, in the early morning and the late evening and various times throughout the day, he was always reading the newspaper. So he was sitting there with his dreadlocks and everything, reading the newspaper, very intently and reading the newspaper. So I was giving class there, and I mentioned that I saw this man every day, he was reading the newspaper. And one of the boys in the school, Indian boy who reads Hindi, he started to laugh hysterically. And I said, "What's so funny?" He said, "Well, you don't know, but every day he's reading the sports. That's what he's reading." So he's sitting there right in the shade of Giriraj, right on the Parikrama Marg, and what's he reading? He's reading the sports. So this is materialistic people, they have their questions and they solicit their answers. But the spiritual people, they have different questions and they have different answers. So we see in many, many different places in the Bhagavatam, we have people asking questions. Maharaj Purkit asked questions of Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami said, "Your questions are glorious." Right? His questions also were questions that would save the entire humanity. They weren't just meant for his personal conversation. Well, you know, how's it going? Oh, it's fine. How's your mother? Yeah, she's good too. And, you know, did you go to the doctor recently? Yeah, I did. And how were the tests? Yeah, they were okay. And, you know, not just those kind of questions, but questions that had an impact that for millions and millions and millions of lifetimes would enlighten and enliven generations of personalities who would read the Bhagavatam, who would take shelter of the Bhagavatam. Shaunaka Rishi and the sages also with Suta Goswami, their questions were about how to save the world. The whole reason for their meeting together was that the world, Kali Yuga was coming, they were seeing symptoms, this place is in trouble, it's going to be a rough time. Now, you know, the better ages are dissipating. Krishna has left us. The sun has set, in one sense. And now, what are we going to do? How are we going to save humanity? And with that mentality, they came together at Namasharanya to try and figure out what to do. Such a problem. What to do? And then Parikshit, he also had a problem. But his problem wasn't just for himself. The questions he asked were questions. What is the duty of a man who's about to die? So all of those in this room who are not about to die, you can leave. But if you're about to die, then the answer to that question is extremely relevant to you. So Maharaj Parikshit's question, they weren't just for him. They were meant for humanity at large. And here, Srila Prabhupada also speaks about Arjun. Arjun already knew everything. He already had Krishna as his friend. He was already able to make the decision when given the decision, well, what do you want? You want my akshohinis of soldiers, or you want me unarmed and as a chariot driver? What's your choice? Take it, whichever you want. But Arjuna could immediately decide. He didn't have to think for one second, right? He thought, no, I want you, because wherever you are, wherever your association is available, that will be auspicious, and there will be no problem. Win or lose, there will be no problem. So Arjuna was already aware that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet he feigned ignorance for the sake of humanity, for the sake of future readers of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, that they would get enlightenment from reading Bhagavad Gita. And also we hear that the Bhagavatam has arisen like the sun to dissipate the darkness of the age of Kali. And by associating with the Bhagavatam, and thereby associating with the sages in the Bhagavatam, one will get light out of it. Someone posted an article upstairs on the bulletin board in the women's ashram about something called SAD. I don't remember what the acronym was. Who knows what the acronym is for? Seasonal affective disorder, another disorder. If you don't have enough disorders, here's another one for you. So this was a seasonal affective disorder, which basically means if you don't get enough sun, you're going to be sad. And that's basically what it is, right? If you don't get enough sun, you're going to be sad. So if you live in this godforsaken, if you live in this place, Belgium, or you're living up in the north, it says it's proportionate to the distance from the equator, that you get farther and farther away and the sun is less and less. Right? Of course, in the summer it's all the time, but in the winter it's never. And so then people become very depressed. They become sad. And they can't eat properly, and they get headaches, and blah, blah, blah. So many things. So without sun, our life becomes unhappy, miserable. So without the rising of the sun, of the Bhagavatam, then our life becomes really miserable. Right? We really become depressed. And we really become illusioned, and we really become miserable. And we don't know what to eat, and we don't know how to act, and we don't want to wake up in the morning. Even places like Florida, where I was before I came here, they have lots of sun, but there are still people committing suicide. There are still people miserable. There are still people going into college, high schools, and blowing everybody away. And they can't blame it on the sun, because the sun is very much there. It's very strong. And they still have a problem. They're still pathetic. So it's this sun that we really need to dissipate the darkness of the age of Kali, this Bhagavatam sun. Without it, we become bereft and confused. And so the sadhus, they ask questions, and the sadhus also give answers. Here we have this example where Sanat Kumar is saying to Prithu, you know all this stuff already. I don't have to tell you anything. I was listening to you speaking to the citizens, and you already gave them perfect information. But just to enliven the world, just to give more knowledge to those whom you are taking care of, you have asked me these glorious questions. And what are the questions? Who remembers? Because you just heard them in the last few days. Who remembers the two questions that Prithu Maharaj asked Sanat Kumar? Don't all rush at once. Okay, so his first question that he asks is, how can persons who are materially impoverished, specifically the householders, those who are not in the renounced, not in a renounced situation, who are entangled in the material world, how can they have auspiciousness in their life? What can they do to get auspiciousness? And the second question is very relevant for us. It was, how can we become spiritually advanced quickly? Right? It sounds almost like something we'd ask in the Kali Yuga in this day and age. How can we become Krishna conscious quickly? So hearing these two questions, Sanat Kumar realized, now I will get a chance to glorify the Supreme Lord. And that's why you've asked them. It's not because you don't know, you do know. But because you want to hear, you want to give me an opportunity to chant the glories of the Lord, therefore you've asked these questions. Your questions are beneficial for you, they're beneficial for me. So your questions are glorious because they'll benefit you and they'll benefit me and they'll also benefit everybody who gets the chance to hear. So these are the questions that we should ask. So if we want to take the association of devotees, then we need to ask the right questions and we need to really listen to the right answers. We need to listen to the right answers. We need to ask the questions of people who can give us the right answers, and we need to be willing to hear the right answers. So what is the mentality required? Well, we understand from the Bhagavatam and from the Bhagavad Gita that the asker of the questions, the person who's asking the questions, he has to have a proper mentality. What is the mentality? He has to have a mentality of service, submission, right? Submission, a desire to hear with an honest willingness to hear the truth, even if the truth is not exactly what we had in mind that we wanted to hear, right? Even if it's Arjuna, he was, at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he was talking to Krishna in a very friendly mood. And he was, you know, saying to Krishna, well, you know, I have this issue, and what about, and maybe I could do this, and maybe I can, Krishna was saying, well, no, you know, I don't think that's such a good idea. But then Arjuna thought, okay, well, Prabhupada quotes Arjuna's mental thought process, and he says, Arjuna started to think, we're never going to come to a solution this way. If you and I speak as equals and I'm throwing my ideas to you and you're giving me your ideas, there's never going to be a solution. And I'm just becoming more and more bewildered as I stew over my confusion and all the positives and all the negatives. I don't know what to do. So therefore, I surrender unto you. And now I want you to be my spiritual master. I want you to give me instruction. And I'm going to hear that instruction differently. I'm going to surrender to that instruction. So now the mood shifts, and Bhagavad Gita, it describes that the mood shifts now, and Krishna becomes no longer a friend, and immediately he says, you know, you're talking like a smart guy, but really you're a stupid idiot. So this is the relationship that the sincere seeker of spiritual knowledge, he approaches the giver or the potential giver of spiritual knowledge with a very humble mood, realizing that he doesn't know everything. Realizing that he doesn't know everything. Prithu Maharaj, even though he knew everything, he came to Sanat Kumar, the four Kumaras, with an attitude like he didn't know anything. And in many other places in Bhagavatam, these dialogues are going on between devotees. We see them over and over again. Devahuti and Kapila, these also very dialogues, questions, answers, questions, answers, questions, answers. Again with Vidura, he's another one who knew everything. Vidura knew everything. He was also a friend of Krishna, an intimate friend of Krishna. But when he approached Maitreya, he asked him relevant questions, and Maitreya gave him relevant answers. And from time immemorial, everyone who hears that conversation between Maitreya and Vidura achieves or gets success from that conversation. They become enlightened and enlivened by that conversation. And again it goes on. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya was God, Ramananda Roy was a devotee. He said, Lord, you're asking me questions, but how can I answer your questions? Better you let me ask you questions. Why are you asking me questions? Lord Chaitanya said, no, you ask the questions. You give the answers. And because the questions were glorious, the answers were glorious, two devotees exchanging, the conversation is eternal. It's immortal. It goes on forever. And wherever we enter it, wherever we listen to it, we will get benefit. And there are innumerable ones. So, and then what's the attitude of the speaker? We have the attitude of the person receiving information. What is the attitude of the speaker? The attitude of the speaker is that he prays, Prabhupada explains, he prays before speaking that, dear Lord, please enlighten me. Use me as an instrument, right? Work through me so that I can say something that will become enlivening and enlightening to the persons to whom I'm speaking. Let me not become proud. Let me not become proud. Let me not think that, oh, I'm such a great orator. I'm so qualified. I know the scriptures so well. He's lucky that he found me to ask these questions. Never let those kind of thoughts enter my mind. Let me maintain a humble, submissive service attitude. And before speaking, the good speaker will pray and will offer sincere gratitude to his predecessor acharyas, to all of the predecessor acharyas, and to the audience as well, because that reciprocation of love between the hearer and the speaker is what makes the exchange of knowledge fruitful. Without that submissive attitude, the knowledge won't take root in one's heart. And without the proper speaker, the proper attitude of the speaker, absorbing information from the Supreme Lord, then what he says will be tinged with ulterior motive. There'll be some manipulation, some effort to get their agenda across, you know, to put forward their point of view as opposed to just giving Krishna consciousness purely. So we have the process of questions and answers, which are glorious, described in the Bhagavad Gita. The great sages, they enlighten and enliven one another by hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. And we have the qualities of the person who speaks and the person who receives. And then what are the questions? We already discussed materialistic questions. We don't want to ask those questions. We want to ask questions that will take us quickly to the goal of human life, that will take us forward in our spiritual quest as quickly as possible. This was Parikit's question. He only had 7 days. What can I do? I only have 7 days. Could you please tell me how I could become self-realized in 7 days? Right? And then here again, we have Prithu Maharaj asking basically a similar question. How can people become Krishna conscious quickly? I just heard a very sad but strange and interesting, quite frightening story that Balavanta Prabhu, my godbrother who lives in Alachua, Florida, he has a farm. And Balavanta Prabhu was getting a delivery of mulch. Does everybody know what mulch is? It's this mixture of bark and things that you put on the garden to keep the weeds from growing. So the truck, some young man, was delivering the mulch, and he backed up with the tail end of his truck down on the ground, and somehow the tail of the truck dug into the earth, and it contacted a live wire, an electric wire. And so what happened was the whole truck became electrified. It became like alive, like an electric chair. And that's what happened to the driver. He became electrocuted. And Balavanta Prabhu was standing there watching this thing, and he couldn't do anything because he couldn't touch the truck. The whole truck was like electrocuted. And then eventually it burst into flames, and the whole thing just went up in fire. So when I heard this, I thought, wow, you know, the day before yesterday, I was in Faridabad, and I spent the day at a hospital taking some tests and, you know, getting a general medical checkup. So when it was over, you know, they said, well, this is okay, and this is da-da-da-da, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, when I walked out, I thought, okay, so I'm not going to die of that and that and that, but I wonder if they could test for an electrified truck to see if that's going to happen. Or, you know, these cricket players, that was the big thing when I was at the hospital, was all everybody was screaming about it, that these cricket players had come from Sri Lanka to play in Pakistan, and the terrorists came, and 6 of them were injured, and 5 cops were killed, and it was like everybody was screaming about it. So can they tell whether I'll be shot? Can they tell whether I'll be hit by a car? You know, so we try our best to stay alive and stay healthy for as long as possible. But the fact of the matter is, when the question is, what's the duty of a man who's about to die? Well, all of us are about to die. All of us need to know how to become Krishna conscious quickly. So the nature of our questions has to be to elicit that kind of information. And in associating with each other, we need to become inspired and enlivened to share those kinds of informations with each other. How can we better serve Krishna? How can we become more Krishna conscious? How can we remember Krishna's pastimes and push all the mundane problems of material life to the background? How can we inspire one another to take up the process of Krishna consciousness? And how can we realize the urgency of that practice like Prabhupada did, so that we're willing to preach and make sacrifices and take risks so that we can go out into the world and give Krishna to others, so that we can give them the answers to their questions, because they're asking questions. Now especially they're asking questions. What am I going to do? My mother was saying, it's so scary. I lost so much money in the stock market. So how will we answer their questions, their anxieties? What is my the purpose of my life? What should I do with myself? How can I become happy? How can I become peaceful? We need to answer those questions. Prabhupada answered them for us. And our duty, our responsibility is to answer those questions for each other. That's why Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, so we would have Sangha with other devotees, and also to give that Sangha to everybody else in the material world so they can also achieve spiritual perfection. That was Prabhupada's ardent desire. So I was told I had to stop at 9:45, which according to my watch is, 8:45, which is exactly right this second. So I'll stop. And if anyone has any question that's short, because we're about to die at any moment, I'll try to answer. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Feigning,
yes. Prabhupada says that. In some place in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that. In Bhagavad Gita, we get the impression that Arjuna was really an illusion, and he was put into illusion by Krishna for the purpose of hearing. But in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada mentions that Arjuna knew everything, but he was pretending to be in ignorance for the benefit of everybody. So we have both those points of view. Anybody else? Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. I did it. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.